Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Don't Go in the Woods, Volume 2, Story 1. It was July 1998. My friend Jesse and I went on a hiking trip at Rattlesnake Ridge to collect rocks for Jesse's geology class at Seattle University. We reached the gravel parking lot around 1 p.m. At the beginning of the trailhead, there is a lake that is very active with waterfowl and occasional birds of prey. Normally, this trailhead is semi-popular, and we noticed there were only three other cars in the lot at the time. Looking back now, I can say that this particular day was odd in that we noticed no animal or bird activity, which normally is abundant around the lake at the trailhead. Everything was strangely quiet, and an ominous feeling seemed to loom everywhere. In fact, normally both Jesse and myself are quite talkative when we hike, and even we said very little to one another. Both of us had packed lunch in our backpacks, along with our usual flashlights, waterproof matches, extra batteries, two walkie-talkies, one cell phone, and one first aid kit. I was armed with my knife that is attached to my rucksack on the shoulder strap, as well as an H&K millimeter pistol, which I keep in my fanny pack. We started our hike on the regular trailhead until we reached the opposite side of the lake. At this point, we exited the regular trail and began ascending up the mountain, moving diagonally towards the rock face of the mountain ridge. After approximately 20 minutes, we came upon a small creek that flowed downhill toward the lake. We decided to follow the streak upward as it seemed to be going in the direction of our destination. We followed the stream for approximately another 15 minutes until we ran across an animal trail that also was going in the direction we were heading. However, the animal trail was moving diagonally and had fewer obstructions in our path, both of which made it easier to move up the mountain. Other than our own heavy breathing, we could hear nothing, and we said nothing as we continued our ascent. We continued on for what seemed like only 10 minutes when we began to hear a loud slurping sound ahead of us. We both looked at one another with a what the hell type of expression on our faces while continuing upward. The slurping grew louder, and now we could hear what sounded like a sigh in between each slurp. At this junction, the creek hooked around behind a hill in front of us and out of sight. Our trail would intersect with the creek once again just over this hill. At this time in the hike, Jesse was ahead of me by approximately 8 to 10 feet. Suddenly, as we came over this hill, Jesse froze in his steps, and I came up behind him, alerted by his actions. As I approached him from his six, I looked over his shoulder and also saw what he was looking at. In front of us, and only 20 feet from our position, I saw what at first I thought was a huge bear drinking from the creek. As my brain tried to categorize the animal I was looking at, I suddenly realized that directly underneath its glutes were a pair of huge feet. Not hooves or paws, but actual feet, each having five toes. The feet were a dusty gray color with the same texture of the bottom of a dog's paw. As it knelt down, the glutes were as large as a Clydesdale's. With the exception of the sole of its feet, this creature was covered in 4 to 5 inches in length, dark brown, almost black hair. Its hair on its butt was all matted, and it looked like he had sat in a wet cow pie. Under his butt, I could clearly see testicles, and I knew it was a male. We stood there frozen with fear. I could not feel my legs, and my skin crawled from the adrenaline running through my body. I remembered my mouth going dry and feeling numb all over my mouth and face. The smell of this animal was indescribable. It was absolutely horrible, and I could feel my gag reflexes twitching as I badly wanted to vomit. Jesse's face was beet red, and his eyes were watering as his hand was over his mouth, also trying to hold back the noxious feeling we had. He then tried to back up, pushing me back also. We both tried to regain our balance while still keeping our eyes on this thing. It must have heard us moving because suddenly, in one quick motion, it jumped to its feet and spun around facing us in a defensive posture. As it did this, it made a loud bark type of sound that seemed to make the tree shake. It stood there with its fist clenched and its arms raised in front like a boxer. Its lips were curled, bearing these huge horse teeth as it glared directly at us and breathed heavy. The bottom half of his face was dripping with creek water and his eyes were black like a shark's eyes. I stood there frozen out of fear and amazement of this animal's sheer size and agility. I'm 6'2", and I only came up to his midsection. I could only guess that this animal was between 10 to 12 feet in height. It was much bigger, higher than a basketball rim, and towered over us like we were children. I remember briefly thinking of grabbing my weapon, but even if I was able to empty my whole clip into him, he was still close enough to have been able to get at us before he was neutralized. Therefore, all three of us just stood there for a good 1 or 2 minutes and studied one another. I was absolutely in amazement at the incredible size of this creature. I remember every detail clearly as if it were yesterday, and I will attempt to describe the proportions of this creature the way I seen it. First of all, the feet on this creature were massive and were approximately 20 or more inches in length. The toenails and fingernails were dark colored with an orange tint to them. The creature did not have 1 ounce of fat on his entire body, and I could see the vascularity of every muscle that seemed like they would have striated if it weren't for the hair that covered them. The calves were twice the size of my own head, and his quads were as big as a tree trunk's and swept out like a bodybuilder's. I'm not kidding. Those legs looked like they could squat a full-size Dodge pickup truck. The glutes were huge and muscular and very high, like a track runner's. They tied into these enormous hamstrings that gave the animal a very explosive look, like it could sprint at very high speeds. The waist was narrow and very powerful and solid-looking. Above that, I could see these huge lats that flared out under his arm. His pectorals were wide and bulky-looking. They were so big that they came up to his chin. I couldn't see any neck at all, but his traps and deltoids were what really caught my attention. First of all, the delts were as big as beach balls, and connected to them were these huge traps that flared out and upward. They went from his deltoid to his ears. The top of his head was conical, and these bulky muscles steamed down from the tip of his cranium to his traps, kind of like the back of a gorilla's neck. Now, the face was not like an ape at all. It really looked like a Neanderthal in the facial features. The face had less hair than the rest of its body, all except for these thick eyebrows that pointed upward. He had no hair around his eyes or his nose. The forehead was sloped, and the eyebrow ridge protruded out, and under them were these deep eye sockets that sank deep in its skull. The cheekbones were very wide and high, and below them was this deep, powerful-looking jawline. The nose had a ridge to it, like a human nose, and the nostrils flared out and forward. They weren't pointed down like a human nostril would be. When his lips relaxed a bit, I could see that he really didn't have any upper lip at all. It was very thin, and his bottom lip was larger. The mouth overall was very wide, as was his face. His arms were huge and bulky, and you could see his triceps bulging out and his biceps look like bowling balls. His forearms were abnormally long, and they, too, were bulging with muscle. His knuckles were huge, and the color of his skin was a cross between black and gray. Believe me, trying to describe this creature does not even begin to do it justice. I wish I could somehow download his picture from my brain and put it on a screen to show his enormous proportions. Finally, we'd had enough, and the urge to leave grew very strong. We began backing down the trail, keeping our eyes glued on the creature the entire time, except to look where we were going periodically. As we backed away, his arms dropped to his side, and he opened his mouth and let out a soft and deep bellowing sound, kind of like the gurgling moan sound that a male lion does to declare his territory. Long after he was out of sight, we could hear this bellowing as we began a rapid descent down the mountain. When we reached the opening at the bottom near the lake, we opened up into a full sprint all the way to the car. We drove all the way to Bellevue, Washington before we stopped for coffee to try and collect our thoughts. We didn't know how to begin to tell anyone what we had just seen. I don't think that I would have believed our own story if I hadn't seen it for myself. Story number two. I believe it was either June or July of 98. I had recently been transferred off the USS Beulah stationed in Sasebo, Japan at the time. I hadn't made many friends at my new command yet. Had just quit smoking and was trying to find something to occupy my free time. Having no real friends yet, I had plenty of time. I discovered the local main base had an outdoor supply rental area, and I started hanging around there since I liked to hike, fish, and generally loved outdoor activities. Eventually, the old guy working there, he was in his 70s. You know the type, old and cranky, tough and wiry. He basically dared me to go hiking in the backwoods up in the Olympic Peninsula. Well, I did, and basically took to it like a fish in water. I started hiking all the trails, starting north and working my way down south. So Friday at work came, and I packed my gear into my car and headed to the trailhead. Still had about 4 good hours of daylight, and I wanted to make good time. I made it about 6 miles to an established campsite where I could light a fire, set up camp, and get comfy. Saw some deer and mice, went to sleep, rained during the night, and then the night was basically quiet, and I fell asleep to the sound of the stream right next to my camp. Morning came. First I ate, then I packed up and started the rest of the hike up to Bear Camp. It was a peaceful Saturday morning, and I appeared to have the trail all by myself, as I hadn't seen anyone or vehicles when I came in. I made it to Bear Camp pretty uneventful. I saw an eagle or two and some other wildlife, but nothing out of the normal. I set up camp, and this is the pivotal part. At least to me it is. The tree I picked out to put my one-man tent under had very large downsweeping branches that stopped about 3 feet or so above the ground. This was on my left. The branches were completely full, and there was only about 1 foot of space under them to the ground. Needless to say, you wouldn't expect something like a bear or larger to get through that without notifying you. On my immediate right was a huge root that was approximately 2 feet vertical and tapered out, nearly 25 feet down to the ground. I think the root was about 8, maybe 9 inches wide and tapered smaller the closer it got to the ground. There was a bare line about 35 or 40 feet in front of my tent. It was about 15 feet off the ground. By the way, Bear Camp is roughly 12 miles in from the trailhead and is above the fire line in elevation. It pretty secluded is what I mean, and I still hadn't run into anyone. I was all alone. I set up camp, cooked dinner, put all my trash and food on the bear line, and got in my sleeping bag. About 30 minutes or so, I heard what I assumed were deer trying to get to my food. They eventually gave up and left. I drifted off to sleep. I'd guess about 2 hours later, I was awoken by what sounded like an extremely large animal. It walked around the campsite about 3 or 4 times. I say this because it really freaked me out, and I wasn't paying attention very hard. Whatever this was, when it walked by the branches on my left, stopped and made like a double grunt type sound, facing in front of me up to the prairie. There was a response about 5, maybe 10 seconds later of that same sounding grunt, but only one this time that came from that direction, maybe 250 feet or so away. Then there was absolute silence, which lasted about 10 minutes. I was totally freaked out and had my huge Swiss Army knife open and held in my hand in case whatever it was decided to mess with my tent and me. Eventually, I started noticing bug noises and realized that whatever that was had left the area. I stayed awake the remainder of that night, packed up my crap, and left without even eating. I never really believed in Bigfoot, but I wonder if what paid me a visit that night was one of them. Story number three. This happened roughly around 1995 or so. Now, this guy wasn't a researcher, just a snowmobiler. The guy's name was Garcia, and he lived in Oregon, an area near Portland. Seems he and some of his buddies were up in the Gifford Pinchot National Forest doing what snowmobilers do, playing chase, trying to ditch or lose your chasers. Garcia was way out in front of his pursuers, trying to lose them. He turned up a spur road into an untouched snow area, thinking his buddies would miss where he turned. This spur only went about 200 yards into an old landing site, with the road ending right at the timber's edge. Garcia's plan was to go up into the old unit, get out of sight of the main road, make a big swing through the old unit, then when his buddies passed, he planned to come down and get in behind them before they noticed. Wrong. It didn't work out that way. When he tore up into the unit and started to make his turn at the old landing, standing at the end of the road, just outside the timber, was a large Bigfoot watching him. Garcia panicked, and in his fright, he flopped his snowmobile. In his panic state between trying to right his ride and watch his observer, who was just standing watching this scared human floundering around in new snow, must have been a sight to behold. Anyway, when the Bigfoot had seen enough, it just turned and walked back into the timber, much to Garcia's relief. He finally got his snowmobile back onto its bottom side down and met up with his buddies and told them the story, which they checked out without Garcia. For his part, Garcia went back to the parking lot, loaded up, went home and sold his outfit and moved back to California. Now, I heard this story from a neighbor of Garcia's, and I tried to find him, but he was long gone. This guy, it turned out, according to his neighbor, was scared half out of his skin. He told me, this neighbor, that Garcia's adventure a year or two after it happened, and he said that Garcia got back, sold his outfit, and moved, and he was never the same, and couldn't get out of the Northwest quick enough, which led him to believe that whatever he saw, it was all true. Next story. It was around 2000. I really can't recall the exact year, but I'm thinking it was around that year, more or less. I was about 15 or so, and the town we lived in is a very, very backwater town. Seriously, you're either a rancher, a logger, a miner, or a welfare recipient. There are, of course, a few doctors and lawyers and those that work in the schools and few various businesses in town. And because of the small size of the town, there was nothing younger folks to do besides the typical outdoor stuff like hiking and camping. But teenagers can only do that sort of thing so long before getting bored. However, there is a rather good-sized town just right over the Canadian border, no more than 10 miles away, with a movie theater, fast food restaurants, and the feeling that you aren't in a redneck community, like the one we called home. On this particular night of the encounter, myself, my best friend, and his older brother were on our way back from this particular town. The road we were following runs along the Kettle River, and we were heading north along the Windy Road. The river was on our right, while on the left there was the base of the mountain range. The canyon is narrow, no more than about a mile at its widest, and less than half at the narrowest. Since my best friend and I were not old enough to drive, his brother packed the three of us into a standard Toyota truck for a night out in Canada. I was riding shotgun, while my friend sat in the middle. His brother, who was 5 years older than us and was visiting home from college, was behind the wheel. We were speeding along the road. His brother had a bit of a lead foot, so we were clipping along at a rather rapid pace. We were just listening to music while discussing things of no great importance, just chit-chatting the way boys do. During a period of silence as we made our way parallel to the river, I was looking out to the passenger seat window, watching the full moon reflect off the river. My lunar observation was broken, though, by my friend's brother. "What the F is that?" he screamed while slamming on the brakes. I was wearing my seatbelt, so the sudden deceleration caused my body to lurch forward rather rapidly, and the centrifugal force caused my head to pivot, so I was looking directly out the windshield. The truck fishtailed slightly before the driver brought it to a complete stop in the middle of the road. There, about 40 yards down the pavement, we saw a thing. It was about 7 feet tall and covered in dark brown fur. My first thought was, whoa, a grizzly bear. Even though this part of Washington is not home to grizzlies, there were reports of them being spotted here and there. A hunter shot one about 10 miles over the Canadian border a few years back. So, for us, this was a real treat. But this was no grizzly. It turned by pivoting at the waist and faced us. It was walking across from the right side of the road and heading left. I could make out its features. It had a very human-like face, not the muzzle of a bear. And yet, it was vaguely ape-like. It walked steadily and without breaking its stride on two legs. I could see the five fingers, the opposable thumb, and the arms swaying back and forth as it moved. We sat there in silence for a few seconds as it moved. It finally reached the left side of the road and picked up its pace as it neared the base of the mountain and began jogging up the incline. Our driver gunned the engine and we darted towards it. There was about 30 feet of clearing before the tree thicket, and this creature made it across the gap and up the hill in what seemed like 2 seconds. The driver then hit the brakes again just as we reached the point where it stepped off the road and turned off the engine, and for some reason, God knows why, killed the lights. It was summer, so the windows were rolled down and we could hear it running. Not too stealthily through the woods away from us, we could hear what sounded like panting and grunting, like the way a large animal would do with exertion. We sat there listening in silence until the noise just stopped completely. Whatever it was must have known we were listening for it and became still. "Smell that?" my friend sitting next to me asked. "Yes," I said. "Smells like shit," the driver said. And it did, literally. It smelled like fecal matter and an unwashed, dirty person. Very pungent and overpowering. "Dude, let's get out of here," I remember saying. I was beginning to get paranoid and envision being ripped out of the car by some hairy beast. After about another minute of sitting, the driver relented and started the engine and we drove off. When we got back to their parents' house, we related the story. None of them believed us, of course. Their family all said we were imagining it or it was a mistaken identity of a bear or something. That valley they lived in had many strange occurrences that were reported. I was staying at the same friend's house one night when the two of us and his dad witnessed a UFO in the sky. And many people say there is a correlation between both Bigfoot and UFOs. However, the UFO phenomenon we saw happened about 2 years later, so we didn't think the two events were really related. To this day, the three of us still tell the story. And whenever we get together for drinks, we discuss it and always clink our glasses together for our first beverage and say to Bigfoot. We told several people at school about it the following Monday, including teachers and students. Some believed us, having stories of their own, while most didn't. Well, in a nutshell, that's my story, but I do have another, and it gives me the creeps. Listen up. Like I said earlier, there isn't a whole lot of employment opportunity for high school kids in the area I grew up in. This particular summer, some friends were working for one of the large ranching families in the valley. We went to high school with one of the rancher's kids and nephews. We spent the day bucking the bales, worst job in the world in my opinion, on a hot summer day. When we finished for the night, we just sat around while the missus of the house served us a good wholesome farm family meal. At the table, I told of the incident that happened with me, my friend, and his brothers, which happened about 2 years previous. While I told the story, the rancher sat and listened intently. After I was finished, he was the only one at the table who didn't tell me I was full of bull. His wife and kids said that he had a weird thing happen to him as well. Of course, none of them really believed him. And this is his story. It was about 5 years before that evening. We were all gathered for dinner, and one of his cattle got killed by a cougar the night before, and he wanted to dispose of the corpse, hoping it would leave the area. He had a special place about a mile or two up a windy mountain road where he buried the bodies of slain animals, not wanting them too close to his home and attracting other scavengers and predators. The carcass was rather large cow and was only partially eaten. He had to carry it up the winding road with his tractor. While he was disposing of the carcass, he had the weirdest feeling he was being watched. I was attempting to finish the task quickly because of the heebie-jeebies he was feeling. Amid the hard work, he decided to take a piss break and hop down off the tractor and walked a few yards away to relieve himself. As he was doing so, a rock about the size of a golf ball landed near him. He looked around frantically, not seeing anything. He wanted to get out of there as fast as he could, but he had to finish the task at hand. Going against his instincts, he continued to bury the cow. When he was finished, he swung the tractor around to head home again, and a rock was thrown at him, this one actually hitting him in the shoulder and then the neck. He looked over from where the rocks were coming from, and he saw what he first thought was a man dressed in a heavy coat. He was about to yell at him and ask why he was on his ranch and why the hell he thought it was okay to throw rocks at him, and that he's lucky he didn't get shot. He had a .30-30 Winchester with him, but on further scrutiny, he noticed it was not a man at all. His description was dead on to the one I gave earlier, except that he said the fur was more red than brown. As fast as he could, he drove away from the animal and down the winding road. The road snakes back and forth most of the way down the mountain, leading back to his house, and the entire time he was driving, he would see something following him through the woods, as if it were chasing him out of the area. Every time he would come up on a turn, it would be standing there about 20 feet off the road, beating him to the turn. It must have walked in a straight line down the mountain, was his reasoning for it meeting him at each turn. He felt a sense of hostility coming from it. Finally, when he reached a straight stretch, he gunned it, looking back, not seeing it following him. He was relieved it didn't follow him, at least during the daylight. That night, he had to go out and do a few tasks before nightfall, not wanting to because of his encounter earlier in the day, but knowing he had to, such is a rancher's life. It was just before nightfall, and he was just finishing his chores when his three dogs started going nuts and took off towards the field. They were gone for no more than about 15 seconds when they returned, very frightened and whimpering. One of them nearly knocked him down while trying to hide under his legs. He once again saw the thing standing there, about 50 yards away, unmoving. He wasn't armed this time and was so scared that he nearly wet himself. They stood there, looking at one another for what he said seemed like an eternity, before it lazily walked away and back towards the area he previously encountered it. He didn't tell his wife about the encounter for some weeks. The only reason he did was because another rancher about 10 miles away actually reported a sighting of his own. Even though she never really believed him, she says that he believed it, and when he told the story, she could see he was genuinely afraid of what he experienced. That was the only reason she could have maybe almost believed him. It was his sincerity. He was a tough ranch-raised good old boy who hunted, farmed, fished, and camped all his life. He wasn't afraid of anything the wilderness could throw at him, but this scared him, and he's not afraid to admit that to this day. He will still not go up to that area alone, and if he absolutely has to, he takes his dogs and a firearm with him. I've gone up there a few times, and the place just feels creepy. Maybe it's just because of his story and my own experience psyching me out, or maybe something is really there still. Who knows? Next story. I used to own a bait and tackle store on the Kalama River in Kalama, Washington. I guess I would have to say that there were some strange things happening to several of my customers who would fish directly upstream from my store at a hole known as the Beginner's Hole. For instance, one of my customers, Steve, and his girlfriend Tasha arrived on the river a couple of hours before daylight and decided to get some rest in their car before the usual crowd arrived. They laid their seats back and turned up the radio when all of a sudden something hit the driver's side window with enough force to almost break the glass. Steve later told me that he thought it must have been a rock of considerable size, as it shook the whole car. He immediately started the car and turned on his lights, only to find nobody could be seen in the large parking area, and his girlfriend was so shook up by it that she made him leave and spend the rest of the night parked under the lights of my store. I guess I really didn't think much of it until approximately a week or so later, because at about 9:30 p.m. after just locking up for the night and being startled by someone frantically pounding on my store door, only to open and find a very scared fisherman who claimed to have seen a Bigfoot within a block of my store, just standing in the riverbank, looking at him walk by on the road, about 75 feet away. It was late May or early June, maybe the year was 2001, so it had just gotten dark. I can't remember ever seeing a grown man so afraid of a wild animal in my life as Jason was at that moment. He just kept saying that he witnessed Bigfoot and to stay inside for fear it was going to get us. I grabbed a flashlight and tried to talk him into showing me where he had seen it, but he refused to go outside, insisting I was crazy because he said it must have been at least 7 feet tall. A week or so later, I went up to Beginner's Hole about 10:30 p.m. with my beer distributor, Travis, to do some glowballing for summer run steelhead, as I had for many years in the past when it started to get warmer and the fish seemed to get more active. We pulled into the parking area and I ran over to the bank so I could get the first class because it was usually payday and Travis stood in front of the headlight, still rigging his pole. I'd taken several casts with no luck when I noticed the fish downriver in the deep hole were jumping like I had never seen before. I climbed up the bank as Travis was just finishing and told him to come on. We were going to walk down and see what was going on. As we arrived at the hole about 200 yards downstream, we quickly climbed down the bank and began casting. Travis was located 50 feet below me, behind a large bush, when I heard a loud splash from his direction. Thinking he must have fallen in, I yelled to see if he was all right. When, to my surprise, we were face to face and he was yelling for me to run in a very panicked voice. I wasted no time following him up the bank because it must have been something pretty serious to scare Travis, as he stands 6 feet tall and weighs over 220 pounds. As we climbed in the car, he was yelling something about a giant ape-like figure that had porpoised, went under, and then came back out of the water and jumped. Whatever it was, it must have been very large, judging by the sound that I had heard and seeing that Travis was very wet from the splash that it had made. I guess that's when I started believing that maybe Bigfoot was real. Being very knowledgeable of the river and the fish runs, I came to the conclusion that, combined with the fact that for the last few years the woods have been closed to public entry 90% of the season, and that the summer run steelhead were being let go out of the lowered hatchery and almost all of them stopping at Beginner's Hole because that's where they had been released, that maybe it had come down from upriver looking for food and quite possibly had found a steelhead paradise. It took several days before I or Travis had found the nerve to venture back up there, but the thought of those fish made us finally give in to our fear. What a mistake. Arriving at the hole, I, as usual, ran over the bank to get the first cast, and Travis, as usual, stood rigging his pole in the headlights. As I started to cast, I felt very uneasy and continued looking up and down the river, trying to see in the nighttime darkness, when directly across the river from me, I heard a baseball-sized rock hit the water a few feet from the far bank. I strained my eyes to see what had thrown it, thinking that after telling several of my customers of the earlier incident that maybe someone was playing a trick or something, that's when I heard it. A low, deep, moan-like sound that turned into a high-pitched scream. I've been in the woods enough to know that there is no animal that could possibly make that noise that I had just heard, and it surely wasn't a customer. As I screamed for Travis, I felt reassured to see him already coming over the bank asking what the hell had made that noise. He couldn't even finish his sentence before that sound let loose again. It seemed to be on the opposite shore and running directly away from us, at a speed I had never seen an animal run at before. It almost seemed like a bird. It was going so fast through the trees, directly away from us up the hill. It had seemed like seconds before it reached the top of the hill, maybe an eighth of a mile away, and remained there for several minutes, making a noise that had every hair on your entire body standing at perfect attention. Then as quickly as it had started, it stopped, and we found ourselves climbing in the car, speeding for the safety of my store, where we sat up all night, going over and over what we had just heard. It wasn't until a couple of weeks later that I was forced into going back there because I am a licensed fishing guide and the only one who does nighttime drift boat trips down the river. Seeing that I had two paying customers, one a young man in his late 20s from Iowa, and the other a regular customer who also owns a house in the river, I felt obligated to do my best to get them fished. And as scary as it may seem, I knew that Beginner's was the spot. I launched the boat directly into Beginner's Hole about 10:30 p.m. and had planned to take about a 2-mile trip down the stream, hoping to get a quick fish or two out of the hole and get the hell out of there. But the fish just weren't going for it. Every time I suggested that we head on down, I was cut off by the local homeowner telling me that we were in the hot spot and he wanted to try it longer and to quit being a baby, that there was no such thing as Bigfoot. He, too, had heard the rumors going around about what I had seen. As he teased me, it got the Iowa guy asking all the kinds of questions because that was the first he had heard of the monster that lived at Beginner's. I tried to avoid the whole thing as best I could, but he wasn't about to leave it alone and talk me into telling my story. I was almost finished reciting the month's events when something happened that I will never in all of my life forget. All of a sudden, the pole that I was holding almost got ripped from my hands, and I yelled, "Fish on!" Or so I thought. It took but seconds to realize that something was not right by the way it was pulling. It felt like I had hooked into a bale of hay that had floated by in the heavy current, but yet you could tell that it was alive. The Iowa guy was screaming for me to give him the rod because that was to be his first steelhead ever, and he took the rod from my hands. As I stood there in my drift boat, watching the line slowly peel off the reel, I couldn't help but feel confused about what could possibly be attached to the other end when it stood up in the middle of the river, 30 feet below my boat, and seemed, by the glowing corkies and sand shrimp, to be hooked in the left shoulder, and not at all comfortable with the whole situation, nor were either the two gentlemen in the front of my boat. The Iowa guy was shouting something about it being a dead body, and I can't recall the local man saying anything at all. The river was about 4.5 feet deep where it was, and it seemed to me in the moonlight to be standing waist-deep, slowly swinging its arms, trying to get free. As I pulled my anchor and tried to stay my distance, the Iowa guy was pulling for all he was worth. I was using 30-pound line, and there wasn't much chance of it breaking. Maybe 3 minutes passed, or so it seemed like, before it finally freed itself and dove underwater, never to be seen again. Just a wake of water heading downstream into the deep hole, and as far as I could tell, never coming up for breath, in at least 100 yards till it rounded the bend and out of sight. To this day, I have not fished Beginner's Hole again, and I am no longer a guide. I mainly stay at home and work on computers. What happened to me on the Kalama River will stay with me for the rest of my life, and I'm sure that all of this sounds pretty strange, but I will tell anyone who wants to know the names of every person involved and would gladly take them to that place and show them. I'm almost certain that if someone was to spend next spring and summer at Beginner's Hole on the La Kalama River between the hours of 10 p.m. and 4 a.m., it will quite possibly change the way they view Bigfoot for the rest of their life.